Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back to Education Talk Radio. I'm Larry Jacobs, your host, as always, I'd like to say how much we appreciate you folks listening in. And we also appreciate you folks going over to our website where this show, which is all about reading in a digital age with superstar expert Carol Jago, she'll be on in just a couple of seconds, will be archived over at our website, education-talkradio.org. A lot of people go over there. We have our schedule, all the archives, a lot of information, news. Just scroll down, poke around all over the place, education-talkradio.org. And I have to thank, as always I do, my good friends at Heinemann Publishing, located in beautiful Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Okay, Heinemann has graciously introduced me to Carol today, one of their writers, and I'm thrilled to have her on. And because they were so nice to do that, let me just say that I want to just say that about Heinemann, that Heinemann offers proven, reliable resources for today's instructional challenges by some of the world's best education thought leaders, just like Carol Jago, our guest today. Their resources for level literacy intervention, benchmark assessment, classroom materials, professional books, professional development services, literally transform teaching and lead to powerful learning. Heinemann, HEINEMANN.com. They are dedicated to teachers, and that will be proven in about 2 seconds. When I introduce my guest, a wonderful writer, and coincidentally now an official old friend of mine, Carol Jago. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Looking forward to talking to you about this subject. It's certainly a hot one.
It sure as heck is. And are you in Chicago today? Where are
I
you today?
I am. Not a lick of sun, but it's no snow either.
It's unbelievable. We're here in Boston, and I mean, it's. I think they had more snow in North Carolina last week than we've had all year, and they had an inch. It's just nuts. And I used to live in Chicago, as you well know. Okay, and I just can't believe this winter that's going on. Let me give you the real introduction here. Excuse me, Dr. Carol Jago is the past president of the National Council of Teachers of English. NCTE, that's NCTE.org. They were my guests this morning, Carol.
I heard.
Yeah, they were great. Okay, so you are the past president of the National Council of Teachers of English. You're currently the associate director of the California Reading and Literature Project at UCLA, and do you live in LA or do you live in Chicago?
I live in Chicago now, but, you know, speaking of reading in a digital age, something else. It's a different world. You can do it.
Yeah. You know what? You're breaking up a little bit. Do you want to try calling back in again?
Happily.
Yeah. I will keep the audience happy while you hang up and call in, because for some reason you're breaking up in and out. I just want to make sure that they can hear you.
Will do.
Okay. Just call right back. Okay. Dr. Carol Jago will be with us in just a second back again. I don't know if you folks could hear it, but on my headsets, it didn't sound as clear as I would like her to be. She's the past president of NCTE, associate director of the California Reading and Literature Project at UCLA. Okay. And you can learn more, which I did, by the way, at Carol Jago, that's CaroljaGo.com, which is a great little website. Okay, and I love the way it starts, and that's what we're going to kind of be talking about. Okay, my name is Carol Jago, and I'm a reader. She taught middle and high school for 32 years. She must have started when she was 6, if I'm looking at this picture right. Okay, in Santa Monica, California, served as the president of National Council of Teachers of English, and she directs this California Reading. It's really just astounding what she's doing. Let's see, and she has called back in. Carol?
Yes, I'm here. And by the way, I started teaching when I was 12.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at the picture here. I mean, you must start when you're 6 years old. You're one of those prodigies, I bet. C. Jago, C. Jago, C. J. A. G. O. at Carol, C. A. R. O. L. J. A. G. O. CarolJago.com is her website. Of course, her book is available, et cetera, et cetera. Also at Heinemann.com. And reading in a digital age. Okay. I don't know if you heard today's show, but let's talk about this. Why is reading important for today's kids? We talked about writing earlier today. Let's talk about reading.
Well, I think one of the reasons it's so important is that at first blush, people might think, well, why, it's not that important anymore. Everybody's just online and you know, in the Twitterverse and the rest. And I, but you know, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm into it. I love technology, but it has never been more important for kids to have really high levels of reading skills to be able to negotiate these new worlds. I mean, I truly believe the geeks will inherit the earth. Those kids who can read and write. Exactly. Those kids who have high levels of reading English language arts skills are the ones who are going to succeed. And, you know, for those of us in education, we're on the side of everybody. We want everybody to have those kind those skills at their fingertips.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, it's interesting that you brought this up because, and you said it, I hadn't really thought that through before, but I'm on the web all the time, obviously, searching out companies, authors, guests, schools, etc. And the entire web is nothing but reading. It's nothing but reading. Right? We can say it's high-tech and all that, but it goes back to Gutenberg. It's nothing but reading.
You're making decisions at every second about, is this a reliable author that I'm reading? Is this a reliable website? What's the tone? I mean, think about, why is it that you follow certain people on Twitter and other people, you know, you just kind of, you know, delete them after a while? It's because that person has an ear for language. How do you develop that ear? Through reading. Through reading.
Good point.
It's through reading more than explicit teaching. I'm sad to say, as somebody who spent an awful lot of my life trying to teach things explicitly, but there is so much about reading that you only actually learn through the act of reading.
Well, I agree with that absolutely. You know, I have to ask you, you're probably an expert on my next question. What do you think the impact has been on the current generation of high-tech kids, digital natives, I like to call them, the impact of J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter? That must have helped to encourage reading considerably.
It did for too short a period of time. Many of us thought this is going to be the magic bullet. We've got it. Finally, we found the book that will engage, you know, the world of children in reading. And people have studied this very, very, very closely and carefully, and why didn't all those kids become readers? And what they found is there was a tremendous social aspect to reading the Harry Potter books.
Huh.
It didn't necessarily translate to Philip Pullman's Golden Compass and other books. I also think there's an issue that teachers weren't always quick enough to know what that next book would be. For students to keep feeding that hunger, but it's a problem, and in the sense that it demonstrates it's not just no one perfect book, because if there could be a book more perfect than Harry Potter for getting kids to read, I don't know what it would be.
Well, it'll be the next one, whatever it might be. But even so, it had its impact for a while. I know
for
it did.
While.
And let me throw this into it. Again, we're talking about reading in a digital age with the noted Heinemann author and kudos to Maya Long, Dr. Carol Jagger. Carol, what about where do you see the librarians fitting in?
I think they have a huge role. But we have to be careful here. Librarians made a little misstep when they had themselves be called instructional media centers. You know, when they turned library, you know, let libraries be libraries. Let libraries be about reading in books. Because what happened is in many cases, the library became another computer lab. And I'm not saying that we don't want computer labs out there, but what the librarian could do, the magic that a librarian brought to our schools and to communities in public libraries, is that ability to book talk, to story talk. They know about all the new books, and the great ones have this ability in 3 minutes to make a group of 14-year-olds clamor after a book. And that's what, my heart is sad every minute as librarians are cut and libraries are closed. It breaks my heart. I mean, libraries saved my life. You know,
it's terrible, and I'll give you an example of that, and I don't have the numbers exact, but I think something, I don't know what percentage it is, and I only got this figure for the Philadelphia public schools, but the percentage of schools that actually have librarians is extremely, extremely low. And that's got to hurt reading for kids, especially in a recession. Okay, when they can't afford to go to Borders or and that sort of thing and just buy whatever books they want. When books were 35 cents when I was a kid for a paperback, I could do it. Now that same paperback is $11.99.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
no, California is cutting library. It is such a poor decision in terms of the payoff, in terms of what makes the difference for kids. It really
It truly is, and you know, of all, and I have to say this. I mean, you're part of it as a director of the associate director of California Reading and Literature Project, because you're a professor at UCLA. But you know, California, in my mind, has always been the state that's always moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
That was always the golden state, so to speak, and everybody strived to be like California, and to see them doing what they're doing to so many parts of their budget is really. It's shocking. It's truly shocking.
Terrific. But you know what's ironic is that it wouldn't take that much money to keep it going. The first library in my life was, I actually grew up in Chicago, was in some practically a closet. In the back end of a public school, and I was going to the Catholic school, my mother took me there, and immediately I was going to read every book in this library. And my family tells a very funny story that so I was 10 years old, my mother's having a baby, and they didn't really tell us, you know, what the facts of life, what was going on, so they were trying to drop me off at the neighbor's. And I said, "You can't drop me off." They say, "What?" I said, I don't have a book to read." It is family lore that they had to take me to the library before they could take my mother to the hospital to have my brother. And I mean, it's that. I know. It makes a good story. I even
it's a
remember
great story.
What the book I checked out, The Life of Leif Erikson.
I thought it was How to Deliver a Baby.
No.
Right.
At the time, I was working through all of The Life of Mamie Eisenhower, The Life of Marco Polo. I mean, you know, if. There are kids like me all over America who have ideas about their own reading lives and what they want to do, and it's our responsibility, I think, as adults, as teachers, as educators, as people who care about education, to make it their access to books possible.
What do you do about kids who can't read these days? Oh, but wait, before I ask you that question, I want to say one other thing. You grew up Catholic in Chicago?
Yeah.
All right, I want you to, if you haven't read the old John Powers books, the three novels.
The three novels are,
you will go into hysterics. The three novels are, they're from the late 70s, early 80s. The Last Catholic in America.
No, I haven't read these.
Oh, you'll just the library will have The Last Catholic in America. Do patent leather shoes really reflect up? And the third one is The Unoriginal Sinner and the Ice Cream God. It's a Chicago writer named John Powers. I just reread them. They're just as funny.
I will.
It's all Chicago and growing up Catholic on the South Side.
That's where I was.
There you go. What can I tell you? And I'm a Chicagoan. I appreciated it, you know? So, anyway, all right, let's go back to this. Reading, it's so important, et cetera, et cetera. What do you do? And now we've got Common Core standards coming up. Of course, we've had No Child Left Behind, all that sort of stuff. What about the teenagers who can't read?
First of all, there are a small number of teenagers who can't read. There are many, many, many more teenagers who don't read and haven't been reading since fourth grade. And so they didn't develop just the way anyone would develop if you were, you know, let's say, reading 10 books a year. Just read 10 books a year, and your reading's going to make a certain amount of growth. But those kids get to high school, and it appears they can't read because they absolutely can't read the books that they're being handed to after not reading the books they should have been reading in 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade.
But are they the books that the teacher, the 5th and 6th grade books, are they books teachers assigned, or are they the books that they would just generically read, so to speak, while they're at home?
You know, it's interesting, Larry. We need to stop kind of arguing, like making those two ends of a pole. Kids absolutely need both. They need to be read. Every child in America, I believe, should be reading two books at once. One book, your own choice, you're at your fluency reading level, whatever you want, comic books, whatever. And another book that resembles the books on the Common Core Exemplar text list that is complex that you couldn't read without your teacher. And that's what's missing. We get into these arguments, it should be all free reading, or, oh my gosh, it's just teachers shoving great expectations down kids' throats. It's not that way. It needs to be both, not either or, but and in both. And more. And more is more when it comes to reading. No,
and you know, it's interesting. Without ever saying it, that was always kind of the case back when I was in high school. I hate to sound like a 90,000-year-old man. Back in the 60s, we had the books that we were assigned from school. The one I hated was The Mill on the Floss.
Mill on the
by
Floss.
George.
Uh-huh.
Ethan Frome, I still haven't finished that one. It was horrid. Okay. But then I was reading, and I hate to say this, but I'll tell you, when I was in high school, all the James Bond books and all that stuff.
Oh, you bet.
You bet. Mm-hmm. You know, but
me,
reading is reading.
For me, it's continued through college.
And, you know, and one of the things that I argue about, people say, she's reading, but she's reading crap. She's reading all these silly romance novels or whatever.
Doesn't matter.
But to me, that's just a matter of choice. Reading is the important function.
Absolutely.
If you're reading, you're reading. It's not up to anyone else to put a judgment on that.
And now, you know, to return our overarching theme here about the digital age, there will be people who will argue kids don't have time. But we have research now. The Kaiser Family Media Study reports that students between the ages of 8 to 18 are spending on average 7.5 hours a day consuming entertainment media, playing video games, social networking, watching television. If kids have 7.5 hours a day to do all of that, and that doesn't include the extra hour they spend texting, they have time to read. They are choosing not to. They are just choosing. So that's, again, where the influence of parents, of teachers, of librarians, of all of us as a society. We need to change this model. Kids need to see adults reading.
So, Carol, where's the disconnect? Okay, why aren't they reading? Why aren't they reading?
Couple of ideas. There are places where they are reading. So let's say in Donna Lynn Miller's class in San Antonio, she's the author of the Book Whisperer. She's got her sixth graders.
Oh, sure.
And they're reading 40, 50, 60 books a year. What's the secret there? They have a model of a teacher who's a reader, who's always enthusiastic. And then what's happened is they've become a community of readers, all of whom recommend books to one another, and they're excellent access to books. So there are isolated pockets where kids are reading. My students at Santa Monica High School read 20 books a year.
Wow.
10
20 books,
books
that you assigned, or 20, or you just said read 20
10 books?
10 books
inside of class. Like I'm assigning, you know, Romeo and Juliet, Julius Caesar, The Odyssey, and 10 books outside of class of their own. I'm going to say their own choice, but it's choice within a domain that I've created. So I'm a little bit controlling in that regard. But my point is that the kids can do it. And these were busy kids, you know, who were in the school orchestra and practicing for soccer. These aren't, you know, just your born nerds like me who would rather read than eat or sleep. These are regular kids. And I think that's, again, what, you know, we have to create these communities where reading is what people do.
I think that is a wonderful idea. It's kind of like, it's not a phenomenon anymore, but it has been that book club phenomenon these days. People belong to a book club, which kind of forces the issue. They go to the meeting, they read the books, they have a nice discussion about it, eat some pastries, that sort of stuff.
Well, that's why I'm also a huge fan of citywide book clubs, book city, you know, one city, one book programs, anything that sends the message to students, but to everyone, this is what we do. People read. People talk about what they read, and make it a natural process. I think it's a little tricky. You know, think about this, Larry. The last time you read a book you really liked, was your first instinct, wow, I wish I would have kept a reading log on that, or can't wait to write an essay. No, what you want to do is talk about it. And that's sometimes where we get it wrong in school, is we make the purpose of reading to pass a test somehow. Or
right.
We
right.
create these things we make students do while they're reading instead of just reading.
It becomes a chore rather than an enjoyable activity.
Yeah.
Kind
yeah,
of like
so,
Tom Sawyer painting the whitewashing the
yeah,
fence.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know,
like
to use a literary analogy there.
Mm-hmm.
What about e-books, Carol? Let me just reintroduce you for the folks who might have just tuned in. Carol Jago is our guest today. She's the past president of National Council of Teachers of English and the associate director of the California Reading and Literature Project. She is a noted author for Heinemann Publishing, who nicely introduced me to her today. You can learn more at Heinemann.com or go over to Carol's website, CarolJago.com. We're talking about reading in a digital age. And on that note, the one thing we haven't talked about are e-books.
Well, I'll tell you, I think e-books are absolutely the way of the future. Now, I'm a dinosaur. I like hard books. Who cares? I need to get over it. I mean, you know, if we had video on this program, everybody would be seeing just a wall of books behind me. Like, you know, I'm not real comfortable with my library in the cloud. I mean, what if it rains? So, but honestly, that's just me. Kids today, they're going to grow
Actually, I don't think it is just you, but it's we of the older generation. But the kids are what's key.
Exactly, and e-books are, even libraries are going to go in the direction of lending electronically. It's where we're going. But I think this poses a particular challenge for teachers, because kids are in the habit of reading things on a screen in a particular way. Think of how you flip through on an iPhone your Twitter feed or something like that. It's really skimming and scanning. And that is an excellent way. Skimming and scanning is an excellent process for reading a Facebook feed. It's a terrible way to read an Emily Dickinson poem. So we, as teachers, need to help students know, like, when to be a tortoise, when to be a hare, and that even though the screen is the same, to bring a little bit different attention and habits of mind to literature, to stories, to poetry when you read it on the screen. And again, I just think that that's one of today's challenges, and that's exciting. It's good to have new things to think about and work through.
Do you find that kids are just from? It's got to be fairly recent. Are kids reading more because it's available electronically?
It's a great question. I think that right now all of us, including young people, are reading more. Curiously, more magazine articles online because they go viral. So, you know that Atlantic piece, how your cat is making you crazy, and it's about this you know, this parasite. Again, oh, my gosh. Everybody was reading that last week. So I think that there is an increase in that kind of this is a very detailed article. This is, I don't know, 10-page, 15-page article in The Atlantic. But people are reading it broadly because, again, of, I think, the social aspect of that reading. Whether people are reading more novels, all that is kind of remains to be the jury's out, and much depends on, you know, again, what new habits of reading we create. I think one interesting thing: don't you feel guilty when you buy a bunch of books and they're sitting stacked up somewhere in your house?
Yes.
I don't think you feel the same guilt with things that are on your e-reader or Kindle
Very good point.
I think
the guilt
they're
factor. You could actually, that could be the name of your next book, The Guilt Factor.
Well, The Guilt Factor is very big in my mind. You know, as books keep dumping through the mail slot that I've ordered, you know, I start going,
oh, my
point. God, I got to get reading.
It's a great
here.
Point.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. That, you know, and actually, I don't even buy books anymore. I use my library here in town.
I am getting to that.
I love it. It's like a bookstore. because no matter what book is out there, I simply order it, and it's not going away, and neither am I. It comes in. The librarians are great. I can renew it. All this online, and I get the physical book and can return it for the next person to read.
Well,
I don't know,
Larry, if you remember the old Goldblatt's building at the corner of Ashland in Chicago, but that has been turned into a public library.
I did not know that. I don't remember the building, but that's great.
It's a beautiful old building that's been
Ashland and where?
Renovated.
Ashland and where?
Ashland in Chicago.
Where though? What?
It's in Westtown in Ukrainian Village.
Okay,
thank you. Ashland and Chicago Avenue, Chicago.
Oh, Ashland, Chicago Avenue. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you said Ashland in Chicago.
Ashland in Chicago, so right there in that Westtown area.
Sure.
And
I know just where you mean now. I misunderstood what you said. I'm sorry.
And I've been going in, like, it was a storefront library before that then they brought to this new building. And so I've been going in since it opened, and it's been fascinating to watch the collection develop. Because they started with relatively few books, but one interesting thing, they didn't bring over any of the old books. They started fresh. But that's really wonderful for, like, in the young people section and in the children section. Oh, the books are crisp and new and fresh.
Great.
It's just – and they've really built for the community. You know,
Chicago.
So
I
you
have
won't
to say this. Chicago has its act together. You can say what you want. They have their act together for the community.
Well, I think so. And because I was just in my heart, like, cheering for the librarians making these decisions. For a while, you wouldn't find a complete collection of Dickens on the shelves, but you would find a complete collection of James Baldwin and Richard Wright. And I'm walking up and down the aisles going, yes, yes, this is right. This is what you want. They also put in 50 computer terminals, free internet access. So you bring in people, and then they're surrounded by books. It's a great thing. It's a great thing.
It is a great thing. What have you been writing lately, Carol? What's your newest book?
Well, my newest book is this edition of With Rigor for All, Meeting Common Core Standards for Reading Literature. And I'm really pleased because it's just kind of catching fire, and that because people are seeing that I don't mean taking the classics and going, take this, Larry. It's good for you. You'll hate it now,
please,
but thank
please,
you
please, the mill on the floss. I'll never forget that.
The mill on the floss.
Oh, my God.
I mean taking books that you as a teacher think are wonderful, like Tom Sawyer, and bringing those books to kids with a light heart, not, you know, just asking bad, you know, terrible questions about them, but helping them see the lightness, the humor of Mark Twain, and just how you do that, how you build that, how you make that happen in your classroom. So I've been really excited about that. And then the other book that I wrote that continues to be evergreen is Papers, 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 Helping Teachers Handle the Paper Load, because that
Lord.
Is the bane of our lives. Yeah,
it is the bane of our lives. The electronics in that case is helping a little bit, but good Lord, the amount of paperwork that goes through is unbelievable.
It is.
You know, it really is. Now, I'm on your website, Carol Jago, caroljago.com. I hope a lot of people go over there over the next few days or whatever. And it says on here, underneath that picture of your book, which is pretty cool, With Rigor for All, okay, the second edition of With Rigor for All is available from Heinemann. I will be offering a Heinemann webinar series in spring 2012.
Yes.
Is that going to happen?
That's happening. And then I'm going to do it again in the fall. Yeah, yeah. And again, it just Heinemann has all the dates and all of that. It's going to be fun.
But would people go to your website? Will you put it there?
Oh, they can
go to
the Heinemann website. Just type in, you know, like Google Heinemann webinars, and it's all there. It's like I'm starting April 30th, and then it'll be. 4 Mondays after that. And
okay,
it's just fun.
And
it's
what I will publish, if you remind me, or my good friend Chuck over there reminds me, I'll yell at him. If he doesn't, I'll publicize those for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we'd love that.
Yeah,
I'll yell at him if he doesn't. If he's listening, I'm going to yell at him if he doesn't do that.
It's not a canned thing. It's live. I show videotapes of from inside my classroom, and we talk about it with the people online. And, you know, it's I did it last year, and I'm sure it'll be completely different just because it's different participants. We'll be talking about different books and just a lot of fun.
Hey, Carol, when you say inside your classroom, where is your classroom, UCLA, or is your classroom still
right,
Santa Monica High School?
Well, right now I'm just work. My classroom is really just working with teachers. I have not, since I stepped out of the classroom to be president of the National Council of Teachers of English, and I've been so busy that I haven't
right.
had a chance to go back. But I'm working a lot with teachers in Chicago here, both in Chicago Public Schools and
great.
In you know the suburban areas. So it's like, you know, you just people say, don't you miss your kids? And I said, I would if I had a minute to think about it. But it's just been, and it feels much the same. You know,
you're doing great stuff out there because everybody needs all the help that the experts can give them. And believe me, you are one of the experts. I got to tell you, I have to bring up something as we're winding down here. But have you seen my old neighbor, Faye? Or talk to her?
I did indeed see her because it was the California Association of Teachers of English conference in Ontario just the weekend before last. So I saw her there, gave her a big hug for you. That was great.
Yeah, she is terrific. And for obviously, nobody knows what we're talking about. My neighbor when I was a kid, Faye Peitzman, became a UCLA English professor, and that's where Carol is. That's where Carol does a lot of work for UCLA. Carol, our guest, is director of the California Reading and Literature Project at UCLA. Just on a whim, I asked her if she knew Faye, and of course, they know each other quite well.
Very well.
Jeez, it's just unbelievable. So I got back in touch with my old friend, Faye. And I think, I don't know whether I mentioned this, but this was cute. I remember my mother even mentioning it. We had a school newspaper back in those days in junior high. And she would write beautiful little poems for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she probably doesn't even remember. And my mother, you know, I was a guy. I was into football, not poems by Faye Peitzman. But my mother would read the school newspaper.
That is
okay?
Very cool.
And she would say, look at this beautiful poem that Faye wrote.
Is that cool?
Honest
that
to
is
God,
very
I remember
cool.
that. I can't tell you the poem, but like I said, I was into the Philadelphia Eagles, not love poems. But
Fair enough.
But no, Faye was talented in English and from the very beginning. She was destined to become an English professor.
I think so, too.
Yeah, she must be wonderful. And as you know, we emailed last week. Carol, any last thoughts before we leave?
Just as the theme for the next year's convention for the California Association of Teachers of English says, keep calm and read on.
Oh, that's great. I love it. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Larry, for the opportunity. This has been
this was
fun.
A pleasure. Believe me. You have a great day.
You too. Take care now.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Carol Jago, she's great, okay? Past president of the National Council of Teachers of English and associate director of the California Reading and Literature Project at UCLA. You can find out everything about her books, etc. at Heinemann.com, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, or you can go to her website, Carol Jago, CarolJago.com. Thank you, Carol. We're going to have this archived over at education-talkradio.org in just a couple of minutes. We love having you on, Carol. Thank you, Chuck, over at Heinemann, for introducing me to Carol. At 2 o'clock today, just an hour and a half from now, we're going to have the White House on, the White House Initiative for Excellence in Hispanic Education. The director, Mr. Jose Rico, will be with us. So check out the website, education-talkradio.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Heinemann. Thank you, audience. We will be back with you in a little while. Love having you with us. Education Talk Radio, signing off for now.